Esoterica Special Edition. Indie music. Unsigned music. Experimental music. Brought to you from the Esoterica program on WQNA-TV, the digital broadcast of the Springfield Community Broadcasters. SCBRadio.org.
This is the Black Lesbian Fisherman. We're trying to find something, me and Rebecca, we're trying to find something, a name that was like, kind of like a negative name, like a negative of a positive name. And we had the positive name, and I think, did you put it through translators or something? But you came up with something, because it was Spanish to start with, wasn't it? Spanish thing. And it was to do with like the fishermen, the Dorados, was it? Something like that. Anyway, it doesn't matter. And well, it matters if you want to tell
Pescadores.
Pescadores. And so we had this Spanish name that we thought was really funny. And when it was translated into English, it was even funnier. So we thought that Black Lesbian Fisherman was actually a really funny name. And then we found out that Stratis was actually a lesbian. So this was to the non-Greek audience, that might sound very strange, but it just means he comes from Lesbos, which is an island in Greece. So okay, if anybody's going to take us out for like transgender issues, then what we can do is say we actually have a lesbian here, and then that's where it came about. And I think everybody, it was like the name that everybody was least bothered about. It was sort of like, oh yeah, that'll do. That's what it came down to. But it was originally because it was funny. And essentially, a lot of what we do in Black Lesbian Fisherman is actually about humor. It's like appeals to our sense of humor. A lot of it appeals to our sense of humor. So although we're immensely and deadly serious experimental musicians, we also quite like having a laugh. And when we get together, it's good fun. It's good fun. We don't do a lot of playing. We do a lot of laughing and a fair bit of drinking as well. And that's on the people here, of course. Yeah. So me and Alan, and I do a bit of guitar, synthesizers, stuff like that. Rebecca, a bit of synthesizers, flutes, and vocals. Occasionally I do vocals, but they're not very good. Nico Forcas over here, he is doing modular synths and synths of other sorts. Stelios is the main flautist, I should say, I suppose. And I'm gonna say that, Stelios.
I thought that was the second flautist.
No, did you not get the memo?
Okay.
You're promoted behind your back.
You've been promoted.
Yeah. I am promoted. Okay, thank you.
Again, you're promoted again. But every time, it's like, Stelios, can you do this, man? Yeah, you're promoted.
I'm the head flutist now.
You're like, the only one of us who knows what they're doing. So.
Yeah, you're the one in the number one chair. And Stratis, So also does synths on occasion, but he's also mainly the bass player. We do bits and bobs. We all do sort of bits and bobs, but those are our main things. And Rebecca, I suppose, is, well, I would say that we all probably use toys to the same amount. We all have little toy things that we use for either for sampling or actually to drive a song or something like that. So as well as the what you might call proper instruments, there's a lot of improper instrumentation going on, mostly from Focas, I have to say.
You get that a lot, you know. You'll have even the people, the experimenters, that will make their own devices. You know, maybe they get into circuit bending or something like that, you know, or they'll take something and they'll even modify it. But so is everybody from the same place?
No.
How does that work?
Well, Rebecca and I, well, Rebecca's from the Midwest as well, but and I'm from England, but we live on an island off the coast of Greece, like most Greek islands are. And we're about 2 hours, 2.5 hours from Athens. Nico lives in Athens, Stelios lives in Athens, and Stratis did live in Athens, and I believe is moving back to Athens. Nearer to Athens.
So the project could be said to be Athens-based.
It's pretty much Athens-based. Yeah, I mean, we play in other places, but mainly we play in Athens and around Athens and stuff. And we mainly rehearse in Athens, yeah.
And then, period on this, is it? It's a current project. Is it new?
I think we've been going for about 10 years or something.
Ten years?
No, not 10 years.
You don't think it's 10 years?
Well, I haven't been here for 10 years.
No, it can't be because we haven't been here for 10 years. So it must be...
Seven years.
Seven years.
How many releases?
We did two full-length albums, and we've done a couple of other tracks for various compilations and things like that. So there's like three albums worth of material out there, and there's actually a whole album's worth of material that's already recorded, plus there's loads of stuff. We actually pick huge, we have a lot of stuff to pick from because the tracks have to be quite edited down as well, because we quite happily go on for hours.
Indeed.
So yeah, it's about 7 years now. And the other thing is everybody else also has other projects that they're working on. So it's not like when we're not together, we're not doing stuff. We're all doing other stuff anyway. Stratis, Stelios and Nico are all in a band. Vault of Blossom Ropes. Stelios, I know, is also in Loop, which I won't attempt to pronounce with the correct umlautization, but it should be Loop, I think.
He says as he twirls his mustache.
He's doing it very fiendishly. I have a solo project, Temple Music. Rebecca has a solo project, the Greyfield Recordings, and we have a bunch of other stuff that we also contribute to. So those are the main projects that we're all involved with. So we're pretty busy.
Well, I hate to say it, but that really fits the profile of the experimenters that I've come across so far. Not always, but a lot of times they're in multiple projects. And the last one guy I interviewed not that long ago from around here, Mark Schwartz, he's got several projects, some of which aren't really experimental, some of which definitely are. And then, I thought this was a new project. I found the I think it was Stelios that sent it to me, the Metaphysics of Natron. And I've been immersed in that and got lost in it just before this interview. That's part of why I was a little disoriented trying to invite everybody, because
She is burning. Dreadful incense, dappled goat's fat, blood and filth, blood of one untimely death of a dove.
did that, and that came out on like several different labels. That came out on Reverb Worship, and it came out on another couple of labels as well.
Underflow. That's what it's got.
That's the newest one.
Underflow.
No, it wasn't Underflow. We did it No, it wasn't. No. We did it with a label in Belgium. It came out on cassette as well. With a label in Belgium. It came out in England on Reverb Worship. And it came out... We did it as well, didn't we?
Yeah.
So it came out in three places. It came out in Greece as well.
But wasn't that just the live thing?
No, that was the CD. Okay.
So what's this Underflow? Anyway.
Underflow's great. Underflow.
Maybe Nico should explain Underflow.
Yeah, actually, we'll let Nico
explain Underflow.
Okay. Well, Underflow is a record show, actually, and it is considered to be one of the best record shows globally, and it has a live venue inside, and the guy who runs it, Vasilis, he's a friend, and he's very much into inviting a lot of experimental musicians and avant-garde and, you know, all the underground and not so famous musicians. And it's been our home for the last 4 or 5 years. And he started his own record label. And he said that one of the things that he wanted to do was a black lesbian album. So we did it there.
As Nico was saying, he gets people playing from all over the world there, and it's pretty amazing, actually. It's a really great venue right in the center of Athens, and like Nico said, he had the he has displays there. Exhibitions, that's what I mean, yeah. Exhibitions. Also, it's a great place. I mean, if you ever come to Athens or anybody, we're just pumping Underflow at the moment because it is a great place. It genuinely is a great place to visit. It's really good.
I'm following them on Bandcamp, so I have access to these other releases that they're featuring on the Bandcamp. The Depths Above, Adagios, Worn. So, you know, I mean, it's a great resource for more interesting music. So, unfortunately, all I've heard is the metaphysics. And sometimes what I want to do in the future, I'll just say right now, is come back and talk to people about a specific release.
Well, we'll send you a link, which just come back to me. It's called Ectopic Apiary, is the first one. So we'll send you a link to that.
Thank you.
Project would be considered experimental.
Strattis.
We elect Strattis to answer this question.
I'm not sure. I think that it depends on the mood. I mean, everything that comes out, it comes out. Just while playing, it's more like it's more like a collective, not exactly improvisation. I would say that there's no backing plan. At least this is what I feel about the music. It's nothing prepared, it's just it comes out with no plan.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that's Stratis has really nailed that. The experimental nature of what we do is really that, is that we're experimenting ourselves with bouncing off each other. It's like it's something that works really well in an environment, and then you do get rubbish when you have to pick the good stuff and get rid of the dross. But in general, it's like, okay, this, what we're thinking is this will work live, you know, we'll be able to do this live.
And also, quite honestly, it's like we're all experienced musicians. And I mean, even if we weren't, we all work well together. So when we get together and we start doing music, we don't have any pretensions. We just like,
it's spontaneous, something like that.
Yeah, we like playing together, and someone will take the lead. No one person takes the lead necessarily, and we just like something, or we kind of, you know, we'll modulate something into something else, or we'll stick with something, some sort of theme that we're liking at the time, and we go with that, and that becomes a song. It grows. It's like we let the songs be what they want to become without any sort of one person being like, this is my song and this is what I'm doing. I mean, sometimes one of us will have an idea, but we all lend something to it and it becomes something really strange, or it becomes something that we all kind of like, or we all kind of laugh at. And that's how it works.
So basically improv, composing on the fly.
It's always evolving around, at least that's what I think about it. It's they have some you know, tracks, some songs that they are always evolving. When played live, so that is an experimental approach to music, to have, you know, don't set up any specific format or structure, and always, whenever you play live, always evolve this kind of songs and music to different procedures, to different approaches. So that is the experimental side of this project that I like a lot.
The word experimental has been used to describe all of these things. And so to me, even though sometimes it's just genre bending, experimental can sometimes feel like a genre itself. And so oftentimes is the same thing as improvisation to some experimenters. And so that's definitely a solid and common approach in doing this. It will be the improv, but that is not always what people use. So you've got people who maybe use improv in their technique to come up with a composition, which they then make abstractions of with written music, and then people repeat that. You know, like Eno talked about that, you know, so, but I find it fascinating how all of these things and approaches are valid, and somehow, and in different varied ways, they always work together with everybody's project to more or less one way or the other, depending on what they're into. So for you guys, improv is a very much a part of what you're doing. I mean, and you choose from that for your pieces and as concrete then recordings. You know, or do you ever go back and make an abstraction?
Well, both really, I think.
Both?
Yeah, I think both. I mean, it's like, we'll all sort of like have various bits that we have ideas about, but no real idea what we're gonna, where it would go, you know? So like Nico has a lot of stuff that he will send or will play to us. And we're like, okay, yeah, this is good. We like this. And Nico were like, well, yeah, then it goes like this. And we're like, well, no, it shouldn't really do that. It should do this. And then so it becomes less abstract. I mean, it's the interesting thing, I think, is the bouncing of ideas backwards and forwards. You know, we have
a conversation about the music and like a general idea, but we don't hammer it down to an exact idea most of the time. And in fact, like when we actually practice for live sets, and we know what a song will sound like generally, but we don't make it so it's that it has to be exactly the same each time.
Yeah,
we're not exacting about anything. It's not fun that way.
We had the last time.
Yeah, that would be boring.
Yeah, that would be boring.
Exactly, yeah, and the last time we played, we have this kind of surf instrumental, which initially we kind of thought, nah, not really, you know, but it worked out really well. It came out really well, and then we thought we'd have to do it live because it was actually like radio friendly, which sounds weird to say, but it's true. And so we got a drummer, and he's not here tonight, but he's like also a hand drummer. He plays like
Djembe and
something
like
that.
Was that third rubric?
Yeah.
Exactly so, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that originally was like about 15 minutes of noise, which I thought was great. I thought it sounded fantastic. And then we put this like surf riff at the end of it, kind of as the joke, really. And then Nico was like, and we really need to lose that 15 minutes.
I think both of us said that.
We really need to lose all that nonsense at the beginning.
And then it could be a hit.
And I was like, but you know, it's like, that's the best bit. And it went down and down and down. And then, of course, because it was a vinyl release as well, it had to be even shorter. So I think it ended up being 2 minutes. The intro was originally the song.
Yeah.
The intro was the song originally, completely. And so that droney thing was it. And then after that, it then turned into this kind of weird surf instrumental. And then we got a drummer in just to play the weird surf instrumentals. And he also played hand drums, so we could then reimagine other songs with hand drums, which actually worked really oddly and really nicely. I really enjoyed it, actually.
Yeah, and it was instrumental at the beginning.
Yeah. That's right.
And then we said, okay.
Yeah.
that's the thing it made me think of, is that when I talk about abstract and concrete, I'm using those terms in a general version of what you have with music concrete and music abstract, the idea that when you write it down, it could be repeated by someone else. And then the other is typified by a recording, you know, like this tape of this one performance. And then we take that tape and we're gonna do something to that. And so you come up with these things that you could never and would never try to ever repeat live. You know, if you did, it would be a whole nother piece, you know, but some things you find you can try to do that and you might attempt to do it. And that's the experiment. How close could we come? These are all the things that make it interesting, right? But this is what you do. It doesn't have to be written on the staff to be abstract, but however you're able to do that. And then when you choose not to even attempt to do that, because it's like, how would we ever repeat that? You know, we had no idea how we did it in the first place.
I think it's interesting.
And then also not always like white knuckling it, you know, where it's exact, like you were saying, but within parameters, you limit the parameters to a certain extent that you're comfortable with and say, that's how it should go. It should fit in here, you know? And instead of just being just whatever, you start like putting some kind of limitations on it, you know? And that's the stuff of the whole thing, isn't it? Because if you didn't have either one of those, you'd have nothing. They're self-defined.
Also, if you look at sort of, rather than saying, like you say, you know, write the dots down on the staff, but also you can use like graphic score type things, like, you know, Reichton and people like that. And
we wouldn't do something like that.
We do something like that. It's kind of how we do it, because we say, it's like we don't actually do it and we don't write it down.
You do it in your head though, kind of. Yeah. Right?
And I'm saying it's something I've done in previous work anyway with kids. So it's like something I'm familiar with. And I think it's a good way of approaching it. And I think honestly, everybody does approach things that way, because you have an idea of what it is you're doing within, as you say, parameters, you know. And it's like, so that bit can last for 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 20 minutes if it's me and Nico finishing a song, or half an hour if it's me and Nico finishing a song and wanting to get the last word in, you know? Uh-huh. And or if Rebecca decides she's going to want to just pull the plug on us, it can be a lot shorter.
Well, like with jazz, you have this head or a theme, and then you have a solo section where anything goes, and then you come back to the head and the familiar, and you've made it familiar by having done it, and then you repeated it, and then it gives people this sense of satisfaction. And that's just, as Stelio said when we had the interview, some of this is just the stuff of music. It's just how music is done, you know. Mm-hmm. You have to have that element of life to it, that random chance captured somehow. Otherwise, but you don't really have to do anything though. That's the whole thing. It's like, so you might have some people that are just utter chaos all the time that could never be repeated. And their show would just be, this is going to be unique. We don't know what's going to happen. And that's all they do. Or, you know, you have people that maybe they want their whole thing is to get in there and see how they could tinker with it. You know,
I mean, I think
different levels, you know.
It's like, it's great. I think it's great fun to do totally improvised things for the people who are doing it. It's not necessarily so nice for the audience. So
that's a key thing, right? You're going into a trance and they're just watching you. Oh, he's in a trance.
I mean, we did do a
nice
show.
For him. Yeah.
We did a show with, and Stratties couldn't make it, and our dear friend George Vrutas, who's also, you check his stuff out on, I think you mentioned Liminal Vanguard is on, Underflow as well. It's great, but he played bass for us, and we did a song which is on the first album, which Rebecca now refuses to play ever again, because we couldn't catch George's eye to finish the song, which meant that I ended up
that wasn't
playing.
Why
no, but it carried on. We played this like this like moderately shrieking ghastly guitar solo for hours. We just couldn't manage to stop the song at all. I think if Stratis had been there instead, I don't think it would have gone on that long.
Yeah, maybe.
Because he would have known better.
No, during practice it went on forever too.
Yeah, I mean, but that was fun.
Well, I think the idea is that we keep a few parts in our minds. Maybe we keep it as themes, but everything else is connected by improvising.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's what grounds you then in a sort of an experimental area, because you're allowing that more than, say, others might. You're really inviting that in and letting it have a permanent place at the table, whereas other people might say, oh, it's got to be just like this every single time.
No, see? For us, song is becoming. It's always becoming. It's always...
Yeah,
it's going to be good. It's going to be good one day.
For us, it's like the song is always going to be something living. You know, when we do it, at least for me, and I think for all of us, it's not just an absent-mindedness that comes sometimes of like, oh, what did I do the last time? But we have a general idea of like how this song is, and we have a feeling of the song. But then we take that and we transport it to different places of like when we're playing live in different places, the song becomes something else, or how we're feeling, or it evolves or changes along with us. A lot of times in different places, songs that we've done have been different songs where we were, even though they were similar and you could recognize the song as it was, it became something else. Depending on where we were playing it, when we were recording it, even though the song was in general recognizable, it became something else because it was living. And that's, I don't know, to me that's important.
Yeah, but...
A lot of experimentation, a lot of experimentation goes with the titles of the songs. I think that is the result of mistranslated words from English to Greek and vice versa, you know, and because Alan and Rebecca don't speak Greek that well, and we don't speak English that well, so we start with a title that is often intentionally blurred and
experimented.
Is communicated to the others, and so it, you know, and finally Rebecca has the final seal, seals the final title.
Well, so then how about the third question? When did you first begin? When did you first become? Oh, it was the second question. I'm sorry. Yeah, we spent a lot of time on the first question, but that's okay. That's fine. So maybe this will be a two-parter, I don't know. But when did you first become yourselves aware of experimental sound and music?
Long before what our project.
30 years ago.
Many, many years ago.
Yeah, a long time ago.
I mean, I started off with the idea of doing experimentation, so yeah. To me it was always an experiment. So.
I worked with experimental bands. I don't know, a long time ago, at least 30 years ago.
I think all of us we're all probably dabblers and experimenters and alchemists in our own way from the beginning. We wouldn't be together if we weren't.
Well, I mean, as far as when you were children, the first music you listened to, when you finally said to yourself, this is experimental music, as opposed to anything else, as other kinds of music. You know, because when you're a small child, you're not making those choices and you're hearing what the world's playing for you. And a lot of people find that they have to discover experimental music themselves. Like it's not handed to you by society. But, you know, I could beleaguer this point all day because I just love this stuff.
Do you know Torturing Nurse?
I think I have heard of that.
I mean, Torturing Nurse are great, but it is, I mean, you could say on one level,
that project.
That it's all exactly the same, because it's just Zhenzhou is just like screaming or shouting with feedback or not with feedback or whatever, and it's all about
right.
Vibrations, you know, whatever. And but the thing is that the person who needs to be satisfied with whether the experiment is successful or not is the person doing it. I mean, I think, you know, it's nice that people like what you do, but. So it's like you don't do stuff for other people, you do stuff for yourself. And the stuff which is good is done because it's an expression of what you're all about. You know, it's like the closer you can get to something really pretentious, I suppose, like your soul or something. The closer you can get to that, the more you are going to be able to do something which is a successful experiment.
Well, and I also think if you're not offending anyone, you're not really accomplishing anything. But honestly.
Okay.
Well, then, you know, I guess in asking the second question, when you first became aware, I sort of thought of it as a continuum way of linear from when you're born and you're a small child and you start, you know, using your ears to when you turn on the radio or something and you start finding out what's going on around you. And then you internalize that and then start making your own decisions. At some point, usually people find that they've been inoculated with commercial music first, or even church music maybe first. And then they later find what they like. And some people never like experimental music, or they would never consider what they were doing to have any experimental aspects, like I say. But other people, they find this underground stuff, and usually underground is synonymous with experimental, right? So they say, well, all right. One guy said the band Yes was one of the things that broke him out of this thinking that he was in prior to that as a young person. Another person said, you know, Brian Eno. For me, the first record I bought where I was conscious that this is experimental was No Pussy Footing by Robert Fripp and Brian Eno, you know. And then recently, what was it? I hate that I've forgotten her name already. The woman that, I shouldn't have even brought it up because I can't think of her. They always talk about Brian Eno inventing ambient instead of this woman who actually did. Who?
Did he adopt it?
I don't know. I might not. Maybe somebody else invented it too. You know? So anyway, that question is really trying to focus on what was the first thing that influenced you, you know, when you were younger, that got you thinking of it as something experimental or even alternative, maybe.
I mean, I can answer that.
Let's
say, what I was going to say was, I'm sure everybody can pick the moment when they thought, hey, this is pretty cool, I like this, and they can say what that is. And I know that for a fact, because I've talked to Stratis about it, and I've talked to everybody about things that are like, holy f***, you hear this thing, you know. And it doesn't mean you want to do that thing. I mean, it's like, we're talking, Stratis and I were talking about the Gun Club once. And it's like, Gun Club were one of the things that Stratis was like, wow, this is fantastic. And I think the Gun Club are fantastic, totally fantastic. But I wouldn't say for me that was the moment. But I mean, the Gun Club were f***ing experimental. You know, they were an experimental band. There's no two ways about it. Stratis, what do you think?
Yes, this is one approach. I mean, I was really obsessed as a teenager with the Gun Club, and we found with Alan that we have a mutual admiration about the band. And as Alan says, yes, we may say that these guys were experimental somehow. In their own way. I mean, they changed this punk and blues into something else. Okay, they have more structured songs. Now, for me, there are two things that I found out that they were quite experimental when I first heard about that. It was... one, it was from the Velvet Underground and the White Light, White Heat album. And the other one was John Coltrane playing Love Supreme, something like that. These two were, I said, wow, this is something else that I have never heard before.
Okay. For me, I think that because I grew as a kid with progressive music, you know, Genesis and Yes and King Crimson and Van der Graaf, all that stuff. Actually, the milestone was when, as a teenager, a friend brought me from the UK Japan's The Teen Drum album, which, you know, it was, this thing blew me away. So after that, you know, I mean, I knew David Bowie and Brian Eno and all this stuff. So eventually I went to Jon Hassel. And that was the moment that, you know, the universe just expanded sonically to all other directions, you know. And I think Jon Hassel's music was the thing that led my mind to try different approaches and opened up my ears, you know, to a whole new world of music. After that, you know, a lot of musicians, a lot of bands came, you know, naturally. And of course, you know, when we say experimental music, usually we mean the music that was after John Cage and the rest, you know, after the avant-garde movement, you know. But I think that I discovered that later, going backwards from Jon Hassel towards the 50s, you know. And so that's my, I think this is, my story. Okay.
Elaine Radin, if I'm pronouncing that right. Yeah, she came up here. See, it's awkward, but I had to stop you because that's exactly what I'm looking for. Stuff like that I haven't ever heard of, you know? It's like,
oh, really?
Got the John Cage, got the Brian Eno and all that. And also, conversely, the person I was talking about before was Wendy Carlos. Wendy Carlos did the Clockwork Orange soundtrack for Kubrick, and she often gets eclipsed by Brian Eno's impact, and I know myself growing up that Brian Eno loomed large in all of this for me, because that was when I started going to the record store for a completely different reason than I was before, you know, like it wasn't just a dance anymore, you know. But and I only recently ever even heard of Wendy Carlos. So I've been, and I love that soundtrack and just never really realized who did it or anything like that. Like, I don't actually own the soundtrack. I admit to Clockwork Orange. But so Elaine Radig, so I'm gonna write that down as another project to look into. There was a guy.
Yes, she was before Wendy Carlos, actually.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Now, especially like the ones, the experimenters that go back as far as you can find them, you know, like Terramin, you know, and then Tamita, I think was an experimenter, but that doesn't go back real far. And then of course you got all your jazz guys, because the whole idea of what we're talking about with improvisation is a very, very much a part of what jazz is, you know. And it's taking, like Coltrane, you know, taking that Julie Andrews, you know, stuff I'm partial to, you know, changing it all around this like very white knuckle piece, you know, and just like flipping it backwards, you know. And so, but you get that. That's also something Brian Eno talked about, was the shock of the perfect copy. But you also get that idea of if you take something that someone's familiar with, and you really want to throw them, then you take the familiar and make it unfamiliar somehow. And then you've really done it. Then you've really, and you've also drawn them in a little bit too. Like you say, if it's just this harsh noise all the time, it will get to the point where it will, you know, all just sound the same, you know, and no longer take you on a journey, but rather just be assaulting all the time, you know. And then maybe that gets boring after a while. Maybe some people want to do something different. Maybe music is the only place you can really do that, is when you take those sounds and you marshal them through these techniques and you get something that you would call music out of that. But other people, I've heard, had them say that music is purely subjective. If you like it, it's music. The birds outside is music. You know, traffic is music. And, you know, so it's all, then we have the thing, we have to define our terms, right? And then have to agree on those definitions. So, you know, but the whole point of all of this is maybe, you know, coming up with various definitions and then utilizing them as you will. Yes, awesome. And then, so did anyone else have any other influences they wanted to get down or?
I think we talked about it in the other interview, but yeah, for me also progressive rock was first encounter with a different thinking, experimental thinking, and some classical musicians from 20th century.
Oh yeah,
that was my main influences, or my main, you know, things to listen differently.
Yeah, a lot of people mention progressive rock. It comes up a lot, in fact. Well, and you know, they had a lot of opportunity to improvise. And when you know a blues scale or whatever, you can really mess around with it, and there's a lot of improvisation that just takes place within just a few notes. You know, I often talk about with tone, like I like to, I'm really a tone freak. I'm always changing my tone. You could just, that's just one note. That's just the quality of one single note, and that's all you're dealing with. You know, it doesn't even matter what you play. You're trying to get that voice just like you want it, and then somebody else can, you know, write something for you to play, you know. So that's just, it's the art of one note for that goes on forever. It goes on forever. But anyway, it keeps changing its voice. Like the note doesn't change, it's the same note, but the voice keeps changing, you know?
Yeah, and the way you perceive it, the way you, right. Yeah. You listen to it changes also.
Right, and you might even do something like
Terry Riley's, you know, like Terry Riley's in C.
Yeah, or a rainbow in curved air, or anything like that.
Yeah, or La Maximerómata, which has influenced Alan and Rebecca.
Yes, indeed.
So, how many of these should I be writing down?
Keep writing down.
Could you send me a list of some of those that you just mentioned? Because you know, I don't really know what you're talking about, and I would really like to know.
Okay, Terry Riley is a minimalist, like the one, like Lamont de Young, going back to John Cage, etc., etc. This is the all this scene.
And of course, krautrock and Kahn and Holder Tsukai.
Yeah.
Krautrock for me too.
Oh yeah, krautrock. See, that's what I mean. I don't mean this in a negative way at all, but some of this is that I don't understand what it is you're saying. Like I just caught krautrock. I just caught that. So I know what that is. Okay. So some of it is that I know what you're talking about, but I just don't understand what you're saying, you know? Like I'm not catching. That's okay. That's fine. This is gonna happen. And in fact, more than I expected, I talk to people internationally about this because it's a worldwide phenomenon, you know? It doesn't just, it especially takes place in other countries besides mine, you know? And so that's, I find myself in this predicament a lot. And I'm an idiot. I only know how to speak one language. I feel like I don't have an accent, you know? Everybody feels that way probably. you know, so but anyway, I want to understand. So that's and that's important to me, because that's part of why I went on this odyssey, was to not only learn it myself, but then share it with the listeners and allow them to be able to go back and
I think maybe, it's also it's like krautrock makes it sound more rocky than it should be. It's like cosmic,
I know.
Cosmischer rather than krautrock, the sort of cosmischer stuff. So like stuff like Faust and things like that, which are not necessarily rocky in places and things.
Right. It's a misnomer, isn't it? I mean, krautrock is not really krautrock, you know.
It was a terrible selling thing, you know, because if you're in Germany, you don't really go under the name of krautrock. You know?
So right.
And
people always laugh when I say it and they don't know what I'm talking about. They think I mean something literal, you know.
Yeah. And
you like those German rock bands then? Like Celtic Frost.
Oh yeah.
They're not German.
But... you know. And I was gonna say as well, it's like because the first thing that I can, because like all the other guys as well, it's like I grew up with Yes and ELP and Genesis and all this kind of stuff, King Crimson and Gentle Giant, Rebecca didn't know. And but they're like the first thing that I can remember the first time I heard Nurse with Wound extremely well, and I knew Steve anyway, and so it was like something that was like fantastic, because Steve Stapleton from Nurse with Wound is a complete genius, and the way that he orders sound, and I've been fortunate enough to work with him to do that, is something that really made me think, well, you know, there's other ways of doing things that I hadn't considered. And those things like manipulations of things, like you're saying about one sound repeated, but you change the tonality of the whole thing. That's like a very kind of Nurse with Wound thing, which is a very Cosmischer thing. And it all comes back to that same kind of thing. So, and the people certainly who were playing the Cosmischer stuff, they could certainly play, but whether they actually wanted to play in the same, I mean, you know, it's like as Nico was saying, Holger Zucke studied with who did he study with, Nico? I've forgotten now.
No, wait, that's a guy in Cannes, right?
Yeah, and he's
okay. Saying, okay.
Damn, who did he study with?
The German guy.
Stockhausen,
yes.
Yeah, Ken. That krautrock, yeah. Right?
Yeah, so he studied with Stockhausen. And so it's like you have this whole thing of people who were... And Stratis mentioned Lamont Young and people like that. People who were very interested in what sound does. You know, how the manipulation of sound affects the person hearing it to a greater extent than melody, to the greater extent than rhythm, and although rhythm was part of it as well, but it was to do with the
manipulation. Yeah, but a lot of those people are just, you're just talking about people who are like classically trained and bored with like the classically trained sound, which can only go one way because it has very set rules, and yeah. So really they're just wankers because they're just like, oh, I'm going to do a sound that isn't how I was trained to do.
I'm going to do the new sound.
Yeah, I'm going to do the new sound. I'm going to go out in the desert and find the new sound.
Yeah, it's in my head.
Well, that's funny because then you got your... Go ahead.
Just playing music how it is. Music, you can't write rules to music. Quite honestly, you're an asshole if you try, because... You can say, oh, well, music is supposed to sound like this, but what it's supposed to sound like for your generation, for your culture, or whatever, is completely different somewhere else. That's not how music is supposed to sound. Music is supposed to sound how you want it to sound. There are actually no rules, other than ones that people think they've applied to it. But, you know, I mean... Quite honestly, this whole idea of like experimental or not experimental, why do we need to be asking that anymore?
Well, I was more asking about it itself rather than why it has to be that way. I mean, that's a really good question, isn't it? I'd say because capitalism, probably, or because of like the, just like you have these things, they're binaries, but they're really dualities, because some people think of, there's a difference between a dichotomy, two things that are separate or cut apart, and then something that's one thing that appears to be two, like a spectrum. And so you have two different poles, and the difference between theory and practice, or abstract and concrete, and you know, nothing's going to make those things go away. That's just the nature of how we exist. Unless you could sit there and say we don't exist, and you might be able to make an argument for that, but you're existing just asking the question. So at some point, I always say one wants to use the words rather than be used by the words. We're in charge, not the words. And so once you get confused by the words you're using, then the words have won, and they're no longer being used by the person speaking them, but they're using the person, because the person's not making any sense anymore. And then in communication, there's another diametric between the sender and the receiver. Who's wrong if the communication doesn't work? Is it the sender's fault, or is it the receiver's fault? I mean, if the receiver was faulty, the proper message would still not get through, you know? But if the message was wrong to begin with and wasn't made so that the receiver could hear it, then maybe it was the sender's fault. But then maybe there's no one's at fault, but then the message either gets through or it doesn't. So you can't get away from these things. It'll chase you down, you know? And so what we do is we turn around, I guess, and we try to make art out of it, you know? And in this case, we're talking about audio. Mainly we've limited this and what you're doing mostly to, like, you have an album cover, but it's mostly audio. I mean, it's not performance art, it's not theater, it's music. And that's the word we use for audio. So we have this problem with sound art. Is it sound art? Is it sound? Is it music? And this comes into this question. I was going to say, with the influence, the next thing was going to be, when did you start doing it, after you were influenced or before? And some people have no influences. That's that. If you have no influences, you just listened to commercial music and you rejected it and you did something different and you didn't have any influences, maybe. That happens sometimes. It's rare. Usually we all have influences and we say, wow, and we try to start doing it ourselves. Some people listen to it and they never try to do it, you know? But we've all moved into where we started producing something based on what we were influenced by. So that would be the thing. My next question was, when did we all start experimenting? But it always comes up. What is the difference here? What are we talking about? Noise? Are we talking about music? Are we talking about sound? And so I used to talk about them as opposing each other, but really it's a relationship, you know, and they're terms for these phenomenon that we observe, you know, with our ears. And there's a relationship between sound and music. And like I say, I maintain that you can have music, you can have sound without music, but you can't have music without sound. And that's saying that music has something to do with the repetition, with the repeatability of the piece, you know, if it's written. I mean, it can be written very experimentally, but if you write it down and abstract it, someone then could repeat it exactly like that, an experimental piece. And it like PDQ Bach, you know, it might call for a particularly weird instrumentation. Like you might say right there in the music, you're supposed to remove your mouthpiece and just buzz through your mouthpiece with no instrument. And then go back, you know, on the next measure. And then, but if it's repeated, then I've got other people that they say, well, why? All right, your question is, why would we do this? It's because people don't agree. And if they did all agree, that would be really boring. You know, then we'd just be playing the one note and it wouldn't change its tonality. And in fact, that's really weird, because that's what they say happens in heaven when everyone's singing in the heavenly choir. There is no differentiation of anything. And so to us being alive right now on Earth, that would be very boring, you know? The reason why is because without that, there's nothing. There's no understanding of anything around us or awareness. In fact, as soon as you become aware of something, you're sort of putting it into a framework. You really can't can't perceive it. Perception is a kind of order that you're imposing. But I guess what you don't want is you don't want that to be narrow. You know, you want to be open to what you're perceiving. So whose fault is it? Your fault for faulty perception, or the world around you for giving you crappy stuff to perceive, you know? I mean, it's like, it's a never ending question. And most people never even try to answer it. So I guess the productions we make, those are our answers, you know? Those are our answers to these questions. So you might as well say, why even make music or sounds? Why not just, you know, write words and be happy with that, you know? Because we want to make noise. We want to make a joyful noise. We want to make reverberations, you know? And so I know what you mean, because a lot of times people, they say, I don't like repetition, or I don't like techno because it's repetitious. But if there was no repetition, there would be no music. Rhythm is repetition. All right, like, this is deep, isn't it? That's a really good question. Actually, you challenged me. That was a challenge.
Okay, I will challenge you.
It's a good question, you know.
I think, as we talked in the beginning, it is like taking one theme and all around, or all the connections are improvised. As you told us before regarding the, let's say, the Julie Andrews melody, like My Favorite Things. If you take the first performance of the song by Coltrane, and then find all the other covers he did until, let's say, the Japan concert, you'll see that the song at the end, the theme at the end does not appear at all. It's maybe only played barely. So this is what we do, I suppose. Or this is what are we trying to do. I challenge you to check all the covers Coltrane did, and you'll find out what's going on. I mean,
But you know what piece he's playing when you hear it.
No, maybe at his last concert you cannot really find out what's going on. It's only in the title.
Maybe he didn't know. Eh? Maybe he didn't know that as well.
You know? Yes, maybe he forgot it also.
But for me, it's only sound, and sound concludes everything, from tonality changes to noise or micrograins to very lengthy parts of waveforms. And actually, I think the main question here is not a division between sound and music, but the main question is going back to the root of why I'm doing this. And if you do music, let's call it that, if you do sound, then it's if your approach is like a painter, you know, that is putting colors on a canvas, trying to capture the atmosphere that he has in his mind. I think this is what we do as Black Lesbian Fishermen. You know, we try to capture an atmosphere, and that atmosphere usually comes from, without even talking about it, but usually comes from our point of view in a specific time. Our aesthetics.
Okay.
You've just heard part one of our interview with Black Lesbian Fishermen from Athens, Greece. Watch for part two in our next episode of Esoterica Special Edition.